Welcome back, my dears. However that time was spent, I hope it was nourishing. And as I mentioned before, we'll just move right into the sit. So, and if you feel free to keep your camera on, and if you want to turn it off, I totally understand. So again, just take care of yourself. But it is fabulous for us to be able to see each other. But I'm going to invite you again to close your eyes. And allow yourself to feel the support, as I mentioned before, of what's beneath you, the chair, the cushion, the floor, the bed, the couch, whatever your body's resting upon. That is, of course, resting upon the earth. Feeling it, feet on the earth, your connection to the earth. And for the sit today, I thought we would just, last week we were with the water element, and today just being with the earth element, which many of you know is one of my primary practices. So as I mentioned before, to feel into the sit bones, allowing the attention to rest perhaps on the lower half of the body. And just as almost a counter move from the energies in the mind that can push and pull us and spin us out. So allowing the attention and the awareness just to drop down. Again, the support of the whatever you're sitting upon. The earth and in the bones, can we rest in the bones? Holding in the mind's eye, if it's helpful, and an image of a mountain, sort of the iconic spirit rock, tree and rock. Image of, for our Pacific Northwest friends, sort of Mount Rainier, or those in the Bay Area, Mount Tamalpais, Mount Diablo. Whatever earth image, that when you call it to mind, there's a sense of, oh yeah. So iconic Mount Fuji or Mount Shasta, mountains that seem to arise from the horizon, that the solidity of the mountain is unmoved. Winds and storms, even fires, the foundational aspect of the mountain. Remains. Allowing that solidity that may come with an image of a redwood tree, or again, that iconic spirit rock. Steady, yeah, there's a steadiness. There's also an ancientness, you know, the rocks that surround us, the 100 years of redwood trees growing. Allowing yourself to align with the ancestry of the trees, the rocks, the mountains, the hillsides. So it is externally the relative stillness, steadiness, gravitas. So it is within this body of ours. In the bones, if it's helpful to really have the image of the skull and the jawbones, the vertebrae, the clavicle, shoulder blades, the rib cage, the pelvic bowl, the long bones of the arms, the long bones of the legs, the little bones in the hands and the feet. All of our precious joints, yeah, the elbows and the hips and the knees. Can we rest here? Rest in this relative stillness of the earth element in the body that is resting upon the earth element that is beneath us and around us. resting with each breath in and each exhale. Inviting the attention to drop and drop and drop. Knowing the mind will do what it does and pulling us in this direction or in that direction. Replaying conversations or getting upset about something. Okay, that's what the mind does. As my dear friend Juliana has said, the mind secretes thoughts the way the mouth secretes saliva. Okay. We can watch it and we can let it go. Like those clouds that pass through the sky, pass by the mountain. And allowing ourselves to rest a sense of homecoming in the bones. And please remember, there's no such thing as a bad sit. We come, we take our seats, and we see what happens. Meeting what does happen, what moves through, with a sense of a generous curiosity. Beautiful. Always so nice to sit together. And thank you, Kristen, for ringing the bell. Today, I'm going to follow a little bit on the heels of last week's, as I mentioned, so we shared about the river trip and water, sort of shifting gears into the a little bit of the earth element and a sense of belonging to the earth. I want to start with some words from Rumi. Today, like every other day, we wake up empty and frightened. Don't open the door to the study and begin reading. Take down a musical instrument. Let the beauty we love be what we do. There are hundreds of ways to kneel and kiss the ground. And this invitation of let the beauty we love be what we do. On Tuesday, like many of us, I would imagine, in the States here, my daughter and I were watching the fireworks here in Lexington. And it was beautiful urban gathering. Kids, everyone was there. And I just felt such a sweetness of the generosity of cities across the U.S. that put on these fireworks displays. Yeah, as taxpayers, we pay for it. But it was they were incredible. And they're so beautiful. And just thinking of the people who make the fireworks, like they make them only for the enjoyment, for people, for us to enjoy. And this whole display that the city paid for was simply for the citizens to come together and be in awe of these fireworks. And super sweet. They're like little kids around and sort of listening to the parents talk to the kids. And just this sweetness of the what I was holding is kind of the generosity of the fireworks, but then the beauty of it. And how do we allow these principles of beauty and generosity to really guide us? Generosity, Donna, is such a primary force in the Buddhist teachings, and sort of the classic metaphor of Buddhist teachings is the river and then the bridge that spans, and the first pillar of the bridge of three. The first one is generosity, that the teachings really are in order to really be available to the teachings, we need this to orient towards the generosity of the heart. And this is not generosity by means of transference of money. It's much more, as I hold it, just being in this flow of there's a natural giving and receiving in the world, a relationship to the trees. They breathe, we breathe, we help each other out. And how do we locate ourselves in this flow of generosity? That's so easy to miss in a culture that's so polarized and so many tragic things are happening. It takes work to kind of locate ourselves in this flow of generosity, kind of thinking of last week's sort of the image of standing in the river, being in the river, quote that someone shared about sitting and standing in the river, always changing. But the teachings of generosity really are one of the things that doesn't change. It's how can we, against all odds sometimes, really allow the mind to orient towards a place of generosity, a movement towards seeing the receptivity of what we offer, what we are given. Another poem. By one Ramon Finis. I am not I. I am not I. I am this one walking beside me whom I do not see, whom at times I manage to visit, whom at other times I forget. The one who remains silent when I talk, the one who forgives sweet when I hate, the one who takes a walk where I am not, the one who will remain standing when I die. That earlier line, I am not I, I am this one walking beside me whom I do not see, whom at time I manage to visit. And I take this to mean ways that we can forget ourselves. We can forget that which we most fundamentally belong to, this form of ours, right? Which is why I love and repeatedly give instructions on the earth element of like, oh, can we ground here? There's so much that pulls us up and out. Or spinning in the mind. into that counter move, to come back into the body, to land in the bones, to land in this physical form of ours, right? This fathom long form, which is said to hold all the teachings of the Buddha. Part of this is being in the receiving of what the body can offer, the lungs work, the heart, the spleen, the kidneys, you know, all these organs of ours that work. Sometimes they don't always, but the correctness of how the body knows what to do is phenomenal. That in and of itself is this movement of generosity to acknowledge, oh, my lungs can breathe, my heart can beat. Okay. And allowing the awareness of generosity to kind of be a low bar. It's not to be sort of grand acts, but just, oh, there's air, there's gravity, there's a chair beneath me, as starting points to orient the mind, orient the body, the mind, this organism of ours, to remain open to a sense of belonging. I'm gonna pull up a quote. This is from an interview with Tammy Simons and Reverend Angel Kyoto Williams. I have to say, I think it was a couple of years ago. She was on the property and I was going into the teacher's lounge down below. I got so starstruck. I was like fumbling over myself. It was just so fun to meet her. But she writes, she's talking about belonging. And this is what she says, that we try to locate ourselves in external spaces. She says, belonging belongs to you. Often we can define ourselves by external things. Belonging is about how I relate to all these external groups. I belong, I don't belong. This and very externally focused. We feel this tension of external belonging. So this is her continuing. And locate this, where do I belong? We're pulled in some way to mark our space. And this question of where do I belong? And I think a phrase like, this is me, also a phrase I can come in of, I don't belong. Whether it's an anticipatory, am I going to be welcome, or I don't belong, the sense that we can have a default of moving into a place of I'm not going to belong here. Back to Reverend Angel Kyoto Williams, necessity of having a fundamental internal belonging. Otherwise, we're so vulnerable to the worldly winds of these external forces of groups that include us and don't include us, exclude us. What does it mean to have a fundamental sense of belonging? We are all shaped by causes and conditions, place and location. Something must transcend this. All the various ways in which we are shaped, we have inherited and been shaped by everything outside. She continues, to be able to return to myself, to have a sense of okayness. I am okay, this is okay. A basic okayness, which is not necessarily easy to come by. Right, the body may have a real sense of not okay, something is wrong in the body. Yes, and that larger scope of moving towards an okayness given what's actually happening. And we know the feeling of not belonging, which suggests we know the feeling of belonging. To be embodied is to be in tune with our heart and mind and body, our soma, our systems. In reality, what's true for me? What do I know about this body of mine? And she writes, I am the only one who can be the arbiter of what's true. And being able to acknowledge what's true, this body feels like this, it's healthy in these ways, it's not healthy in these ways. This body knows I've experienced these traumas. I've healed these, I haven't healed those. This is where I get caught. This is what spins me up. This is what makes me angry. These teachings of and pay attention allows us to understand this patchwork, complicated patchwork of our nature, right? Given the conditions of our lives, the traumas we've experienced, the things that we have missed, that we didn't receive, the things that we have received, all go in to form how we move in the world. The teachings of, hey, come check this out. How is it just to sit for a half an hour together and focus the mind when possible on just resting in the bones? That stillness, yeah, that can steady the mind such that there's an availability to then notice, oh, when I get stressed, the mind goes here. This trauma that I'm still trying to heal affects me in these ways. And sometimes it requires more than meditation practice to heal those traumas. But there's a pointing, and that these teachings by the early instructions in the arriving sit of, can we arrive and be available? Can we be available to these teachings? Can we be available to the awareness that comes? Oh, this area of whatever's happening in the mind and the body I need help with. You know, that to be able to reach out beyond ourselves, to place ourselves in the family of things. Yeah, that we are interconnected beings, like we are herd animals. And we need each other. We're wired to be in connection with each other. And as we all know, as we've experienced, our sort of greatest harms happen in relationship, and our greatest healings can happen in relationship. And that these relationships are not bound solely by humans, human to human, but also our ability to relate to, connect to, and belong to the natural environment. In Robin Wall Kimmerman's book, Braiding Sweetgrass, she has this lovely chapter. Unfortunately, I don't have the book with me, but a chapter is called The Grammar of Animacy, and actually did a day long inspired by this notion of, in indigenous languages, and forgive me, some of you have heard this, but in many indigenous languages, the ratio of verbs to nouns is, there's 70% of the vocabulary are verbs. In English, 70% of the vocabulary are nouns. So the aliveness with which Robin Wall Kimmerman talks about moving through that which is animate, which is through rocks and through all that is alive around us, as being vibrant and alive and ever changing. And on the river trip, the river moves through the canyons, and thinking of sort of the stone people that she talks about, there's an aliveness of vibrancy. In the territory that we moved through in Idaho, the umbrella term for the indigenous folks were the Shoshone, but in particular with the sheep eaters. And in various places along the stones would be pictographs and communications. And the aliveness just of the communication from these people, but also the aliveness of the stone. Can we place ourselves in the aliveness of the world around us? There's a quote. This is from Robin Wall Kimmerman. This is in an article in Orion magazine. The grammar of animacy is an antidote to arrogance. It reminds us that we are not alone. By paying attention as a form of reciprocity with the living world, receiving the gifts with open eyes and open heart. And this duality of both allowing ourselves to be quiet enough internally to receive the gifts, to notice what is beautiful, whether it's sort of the dramatic display of fireworks or the opening of a flower in springtime or the certain smell that touches us in the home world or in the natural world. By allowing ourselves, giving ourselves permission to stay open, which does require a certain steadiness and quietness inside, right? If my mind's all busy and I'm worried and I'm stressed and I'm on my phone, it's really hard to take much in outside. Yeah. So these teachings of calm, quiet, steady, such that we can move in the world from this open, receptive place. Paying attention is a form of reciprocity with the living world. Paying attention allows us to be in that stream of generosity. Yeah. The giving and the receiving, the observing, the taking in, the noticing, the appreciating that which is beautiful. You know, may the beauty that we take in be what we do. May the beauty that we take in serve to guide us and allow ourselves to be buoyed when things are really challenging. To be able to rest again in this reciprocity of the world around us. Another take on belonging is, I really admire Gregory Doyle, the Jesuit priest in LA who founded Homeboy Industries, which works to help with former gang members rebuild their lives. And he talks about kinship. And he writes, kinship is that we belong to each other. So how do we stand against forgetting that? How do we imagine the circle of compassion and imagine nobody standing outside that circle? The human task is to dismantle any barrier that exists that keeps us from each other. We've been so historically reliant on moralism, and moralism hasn't kept us moral. It's only kept us from each other. So when you want to bridge any distance, you want to bridge any distance between us and them. And how do you keep connected? This is what kinship is. It's being willing to cross that bridge. I would say it's actually, initially, it's being able to see, oh, there is a construct of us in them, of good and bad, of right and wrong. And yes, there are skillful, unskillful, there are harms done. Absolutely, I'm not meaning to say there's no, it is all blurry. But there are ways that we can move in the world that are harmful. Absolutely. And to pay attention and note that and to not condone it when there's harmful practices in the world. So I'm not suggesting it's murky in that way. But the ways that we can look at the constructs that we may have, that I might have, that's going to keep me separate from someone else, and to question that. Ajahn Sumedha's wonderful invitation of, do I need to have an opinion about this? Is what I'm thinking necessarily true? This is one of the Dalai Lama's daily practices of this evaluation, is what I'm thinking true. What's his name? Byron Katie's done a wonderful job of kind of encapsulating this into the questions of, is it true? Is it in regard to our thoughts? Is it true? Is it really true? How do I know it's true? What if it wasn't true? And the ways in which our thinking patterns, our conditions, our rigidity is in and of itself a barrier from both being able to be in reciprocity with others. It's a barrier that keeps us outside the flow of generosity. And a poem I want to share from David Wyatt. Everything is waiting for you. Your mistake is to act the drama as if you were alone, as if life were a progressive and cunning crime with no witness to the tiny hidden transgressions. To feel abandoned is to deny the intimacy of your surroundings. Surely even you at times have felt the grand array, the swelling presence, and the chorus crowding out your solo voice. You must note the way the soap dish enables you, or the window latch grants you freedom. Alertness is the hidden discipline of familiarity. The stairs are your mentor of things to come. The doors have always been there to frighten you and invite you. The tiny speaker in the phone is your dream ladder to divinity. Put down the weight of your aloneness and ease into the conversation. The kettle is singing even as it pours you a drink. The cooking pots have left their arrogant aloofness and have seen the good in you at last. All the birds and the creatures of the world are unutterably themselves. Everything, everything is waiting for you. If we can be present to pay attention, yeah, and to orient that way. I love this line about to feel abandoned is to deny the intimacy of your surroundings. Yeah. And I think it might be fair that many of us have had that sense of being abandoned. And there, again, I'm not meaning to minimize the ways in which through relationally we have been abandoned. There's reality to that, right? That takes working through. But this orientation towards a generosity of the world, that to feel abandoned is to deny the intimacy of our surroundings, that human interactions and the harms caused, that's true. But there's also a way of allowing ourselves to move in the world connected to the intimacy of our surroundings that thereby engenders a sense of belonging that transcends our wounding through a human interaction. It's a base, it's a foundational place, it's a way of orienting up. Oh, in addition to what happens in relationships that have issues where we can feel abandoned or traumatized or harmed, there's great good in allowing ourselves to feel a part of the natural world. And I want to even rephrase that it's not so much feeling a part of it, but acknowledging that we're not separate. Hence, like sort of continuing pushing against the earth element, the water element, space, air, fire. This us, we're not separate. So I'm going to invite you to close your eyes. Today, like every other day, we wake up empty and frightened. Don't open the door to the study and begin reading. Let the beauty we love be what we do. There are hundreds of ways to kneel and kiss the ground and to allow yourself to play out in the mornings. We wake up, however we wake up, maybe alone and frightened, maybe not. But to allow there to be a pause to take in that which is beautiful. And this may be in the familiar surroundings of your home. It may be in the relationships with people that you love. It may be in the natural environment that holds you or once held you. It may be in the relations you have with animals, beautiful objects, expressions of beauty, like through art, through fireworks. And the question here to really consider, allowing yourself really to scan, what is beautiful? What touches you? What do you consider beautiful? A flower, the mountains, the river, again, the face of someone you love. To allow yourself to be touched by this open invitation to kind of catalog, oh yeah, this is beautiful, this is beautiful. And notice what happens to the heart as you kind of scan through in the course of your life. It's not limited to what's immediately here, but in your life, the beautiful things that you have seen, that you've experienced, allowing the mind to incline towards that which is beautiful. That's present now, that was present at a different time. Faces of those we love who have passed on. Vistas that have been beautiful. Perhaps it's even someone's hand. Just allowing yourself to drink in that which you consider beautiful, that which touches you, that which is emboldens the heart, it softens the heart, it strengthens the heart. It puts you in the immediacy of this flow of generosity to take in that which is beautiful. The rose that offers itself. Yeah. Different sounds. The sound of kids laughing. The sound of beautiful music. The sound of a lover's voice. And notice what, if anything, happens in the body, in the heart, as we together incline towards that which is beautiful. put down the weight of your aloneness and ease into the conversation with that which is beautiful. All the birds, the creatures of the world are unutterably themselves. Everything, everything is waiting for you. So I'm going to stop there and thank you for your kind attention, and would love to open our conversation up for comments, what came up, and just ask that when you do share, just to stay with your own experience. And as Krista.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.